call the meeting of the River City TPO to order, please. Could I have order, please? Thank you. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Gilliland.
Here.
Councilmember Handy Peters.
Present.
Commissioner Mathusik.
Here.
Mayor Misarzic. Councilman Conroy. Commissioner Curry.
Here.
Commissioner McGurk.
Here.
Councilmember Saylor.
Here.
Commissioner Sowers.
Here.
Councilmember DiLorenzo.
Here.
Councilmember Ford. Councilwoman Long.
Here.
Commissioner Revels.
Here.
Councilmember Patterson.
Here.
Councilmember Denny's.
Here.
Councilmember Cusack is excused. Councilmember Lowry. Councilmember Wagner.
Here.
Mayor Emmett.
Here.
Vice Mayor Rogers. Councilmember Wheeler.
Here.
Commissioner Shute.
Here.
Commissioner Burton. Mayor Gibson is excused. Mayor Sal. Councilmember Perone.
Here.
Linda Costello. Heather Blank. Gillis Blaze.
Here.
Bob Stork.
Here.
And we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Before we do the Pledge of Allegiance, we just had Memorial Day, I'd like all of our veterans in the audience and members to just please stand this morning. Now we'll have the Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Okay.
Item Roman numeral 3, public comment participation. We have some people wishing to speak this morning. I believe a lot of it is on the Page Avenue extension. We will be just having a presentation on it. There won't be any action taken on it today. First up I have is, looks like Marissa McCoy. You will have 3 minutes, please. If you wish to speak on this, please come to the dial.
I live on a residential street that intersects with the proposed Page Avenue extension. And I'm very concerned about increased traffic that might go through and about people cutting through our street from Route 44 to the Page Avenue extension. We have a quiet, beautiful residential street that's just off Route 44 we get. And if we're hemmed in on both sides by through streets, it will very much change the character of our neighborhood. And I hope you will take that into account in your deliberations. Thank you.
Thank you. Lisa Raymaler.
Morning, I'm Lisa Raymaler. I live on Corbin Park Road, which does intersect with Page Avenue. I'm a real estate broker, and I have a Florida Master Naturalist certificate. Three things that Page touches on in this area. The first one is that it's an extremely environmentally sensitive area. It is runs parallel with Turnbull Bay. It's the Turnbull Creek watershed management area, and it's tidal. So what happens there is when the tide is high, we have storms like the last two summers. My yard, where I live on Corbin Park Road, is underwater because Turnbull Bay is underwater and all through those woods are underwater, which are extreme wetlands. Second item I'd like to touch base on is that there are a large amount of homeless people in this area where the proposal is. We have obligation as citizens of the county to acknowledge them, realize that there is a problem and an issue, and not push them further back into the woods, towards my house or towards anybody back in the residential area. The third item is if you have, if anybody here lives in New Smyrna Beach, if you've ever taken Page Avenue to Mission Road and tried to go left to get onto 44, the red light was not set up to where you have a right turning lane, a forward lane. You have two left turning lanes. It backs off continually. There's constantly almost accidents there every single day. Second one is coming from Glencoe Road onto 44. There are no turning lights, and there are accidents there almost every single day. At the end of Corbin Park Road, every single weekend of every single, I've lived there 30 years, okay, in the same house. I have to go left to go right because I cannot get anywhere near New Smyrna Beach or the beach, the city. I can't go south. I have to go left and then find my way from the back roads to go right. So if it's going to be proposed that they're opening Page, then they need to do something about Page going on to Mission, because that is an issue. That is a huge issue. And if you none of you have ever driven it, you need to take a ride down it and check it out. Those are my concerns. I live in a quiet residential neighborhood. We're Corbin Park Sub 3. We've had to pay for our roads, our water. We had to fight the KOA campground so that they didn't bring their single-wide, half-size trailers to Corbin Park Road. We're constantly having to battle our little, tiny residential area. We're being forced into the city of New Smyrna. We are county, but they're forcing us into the city. And now you're proposing to drive a road right down our neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. Suzanne Barber.
Beginning to feel like a candidate for office because I've addressed so many boards and commissions lately about this situation. I live on a net road, which is a little dead-end street that connects to Page on the east side of Corbin Park Road. We are on that side of the road are all obligated to take Page to get out to Corbin Park Road. That's our only ingress egress. Aside from the fact that Corbin Park is an enclave itself, and I did a personal research. It took me several hours to count the houses that are in that area, plus all the houses that are south of 44 that you all seem to think would use an extended Page Avenue. It's over 1,100 homes. Now, if you could imagine that much traffic on a little two-lane road, i.e. Page Avenue, if you go ahead with this, I mean, you are just destroying not only neighborhoods, but the environment. You're adding to pollution, noise, and pandemonium because the traffic will be horrible. You're also taking away our property values because nobody's going to want to live on or connect to a busy, busy street like that. Also, if you go across Turnbull Creek and go behind the shopping center where they've renamed it Vicks Way, there's a very bad curve on that road. Now, that road is very narrow. It's supposed to be two lanes, but two cars have a hard time passing on that. They're building 24 brand new apartments there right at the curve. And several times I've almost been run into by people zooming out of Taco Bell or Denny's or McDonald's in that area. So that whole thing is just a monstrous idea. There are so many reasons not to do this. I don't understand why you keep wasting money on feasibility studies. There was one in 2013 again after the one they abandoned in 1987, the same idea. So I don't think you want to waste your money on such a thing, but if you do, we're ready to oppose you. We've got a lot of people that are upset by it. Thank you.
Thank you. Irene Beckham.
Irene Beckham. agenda, and in this manner, subdivision for 50 years, and I've seen many, many changes out there, but with the extension of Page, we're going to totally destroy my house, because that intersection is going to have to be worked on to have the cars going east, west, north, and south. And I'd like to state that I've lived out there all these years. I've seen Page Avenue open for utility use only. That road was designed for the running of the pipeline from Limco to Smyrna. Their first water system came from that in 1926. And it was put of the 15-inch main from Glenco, which is where the first well that was productive was found, because all the wells inside the city had gone. So they started driving outside the city, and that's where they chose Glenco. We have a treatment plant at the west end of Page. What are we going to do with that? It will open up Page. But my big concern is the loss of value of my home. And of course, I like I said, been out for 50 years, seen many changes, some of them not for the best of the community, but time changes everything, we have to accept that. But even where Hidden Pines is, I remember when that was covered with water. Every time it rained, all of that land over there was knee-deep in water. So those people are living on a swamp, and all of that area out there is known as Turnbull West Swamp. And if you go east on Page down past my house, where the others are living down there, why we have Turnbull Creek, which crosses there, and that is a very environmental creek, part of our history. We're getting ready for the city of Smyrna Beach to celebrate their 250th anniversary when Turnbull came to New Smyrna in 1768. My ancestors come with Turnbull to New Smyrna. My great-great-grandmother was born here in New Smyrna in 1777. So we've been around for a long time, and I just hate to see our area destroyed, the quality of life that we've enjoyed all these years with the opening of a street that's going to attract more than just our people in our neighborhood. I've heard it's coming from Waterford. All the people out of Glenco want to use that area. And we'll just have a super highway out there. And it's only less than a mile from 44 where we already have a super highway. So when you're thinking about improving the people,
thank you very much, ma'am.
Take us into consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Nora Jane Gillespie.
Good morning. I'm a resident of Hidden Pines, the landlocked people. And New Smyrna is actually sort of built on a swamp. I am a fifth generation. I grew up in Coronado Station, if you're aware of where that used to be before it was annexed in. And my problem is that I just want the original Page Avenue to be steadied, to be reopened. The extension, that's down the road a long, long way, I feel. But I would like to see the shell portion, which means it's pervious, and nature takes care of the stormwater, just reopened. That means putting a big clay tile in where the creek is, cleaning out the creek, which is full of trash. Our veterans, I work with the homeless veterans. I work on the Veterans Coalition. I work with Hot Meals. I work with Gifts of Love. I'm well aware of the veteran situation. I've been into the camps. The biggest one right now is on Jungle Road, off 44 on the other side. The same as where the Turnbull Headwaters are. There are many aspects, but the Shell Road would give us safety. It would give the fire trucks and the ambulances a way in, and in an emergency, it would give us a way out. But it would not be a convenience for anybody to cut through. Nobody wants to take a Shell Road if they can find a piece of paving somewhere. Thank you.
Thank you. Kirk Jones. Kirk Jones.
Thank you, Chair Patterson and the board members. Currently the Vice Mayor of New Smyrna Beach. This is my zone, Page Avenue. Topic, obviously, there's some things that need to be brought up, and hopefully, I'm a native of New Smyrna. I grew up in Corbin Park. I have seen I'll give you a little history of Page Avenue. Yes, it was a service road for our utilities because our main water line goes from our Glencoe plant all the way to US 1. And back in the day when we had a two-lane 44 and a drawbridge, when I was going to high school or in my younger years, I won't say how long ago, but we traveled Page Avenue. Page Avenue, right now there's two areas that's already paved. It's a 50-foot right-of-way. We have, it is accessible, but we have concerns. And those concerns, we feel that if you do a feasibility study, it would answer some of these that we're asking. And that, the environmental impact, all these things that we're looking at, we know that we could probably, this is a visionary board. You know, think about it. Back in when the two-lane 44, it was bumper to bumper. It's worse then, actually, than it is now, even though it's getting to that level. And I know there was some type of vision that this board and the DOT, said, hey, we need to do something, and they did. And now we're back to that level. And the frustrations are there. I can tell you right now, there is a petition, like their petition, to support this from the residents out there. There is a need. So, again, DOT in 2013 did a study, and their recommendations was that we would keep this on the long-range plan for a feasibility study. And how else were we going to be able to do this and keep that first phase, which is the Glencoe to Mission, on the map and on that study. So hopefully, with all that being said, and I know you all have your packet, and you'll see, and you'll be voting on it in June, that remember, this is a vision that we need to think about. It will not go away. It's going to be, the frustrations are out there. So if we can start the planning and the vision, I always tell everybody there's real time and there's government time. If we don't start talking about it now, in 2040, maybe, it can be done. I mean, we're still looking at a long way. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Commissioner. Diane Rosito?
I am a resident of Hidden Pines also, and we would very much like to see Page Avenue reopened as a minor corridor feeder road for safety purposes. Our feeling is that it does not need to be extended out as far as the new Florida Hospital building on 44, have it end at Hidden Pines Boulevard. If need be, have an extension from Oliver Estates to Glencoe. In this manner, it would not promote beach traffic, and fire, ambulance, and police would have another way to get to us. We also would have another way to exit out of Hidden Pines. On March 18th of 2015, which was a Wednesday, I left for a doctor's appointment that was just under 2.5 miles from my house. I left 20 minutes before I was due and got there 10 minutes late. My point being, it was not a holiday, weekend, or any special event that caused this traffic backup. This is happening on a more regular basis with more and more businesses coming to SR 44. The situation will not improve. I also have had 3 occasions in which I was on SR 44 in the last month and a half when an emergency vehicle was trying to maneuver the westbound traffic lane. It was not pretty. I would not like to think that if they were attempting to get to our home or one of our neighbors, that there would be that kind of delay. So for those reasons, we would like to see you go ahead with a feasibility study on reopening Page Avenue. And my husband and I both feel the same way, although he's not here with me today. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay, moving on to Roman numeral 4, consent agenda items. Is there any item on the consent agenda that a member would like to pull off for discussion?
Motion to approve consent agenda, Gilliland.
We have a motion to approve and a second by
Matusik.
Commissioner Matusik? Is there any objection to the motion? Any objection to the motion? Without objection, showing the consent agenda is approved. Moving on to Roman numeral 5, action items. Review and approval of River to Sea TPO officers for fiscal year 2015-2016. Lois?
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. A nominating committee of the, or subcommittee of the TPO board met in May, and they drafted a slate of nominations for the upcoming fiscal year, which begins, of course, on July 1st, 2015. And the slate includes, as TPO chair, the current vice chair, council member Pat Patterson, as first vice chair treasurer, Commissioner Marshall Shoup from Flagler Beach, and as the second vice chair and secretary, council member Deb Denny from Volusia County.
Thank you. At this time, I'll take any nominations from the floor. Is there any nominations from the floor? Motion
to approve.
Second.
Second by Commissioner Saylor to approve the current slate of officers. Is there any objection to that motion? Any objection? Without objection, showing that motion passes. Item B, review and approval of resolution 2015-09, adopting the Regional Trails Quarter Assessment Report. Lois, again.
Good morning. I think you all have seen a few presentations on the Regional Trails Corridor Assessment, and I just want to remind you of the actual purpose for this study, and that is that we could go ahead and assess the overall status of regional trails in this area. And in doing so, we help position various projects for funding. There's a lot of momentum in the state. Last year, the Appropriations Committee set aside $50 million to help move along the coast-to-coast trail. During this session, before it ended, there was a bill to set aside $50 million annually as a part of the DOT budget to go ahead and develop regional trails. So I think the timing of a study like this is very valuable. In addition, the Office of Greenways and Trails has an opportunities map that they develop for the state, identifying the state interconnected trail system, and they're in the process of updating that map, and submissions are due by June 1st. So not only is the completion of this report position us to go ahead and provide input and an update to that map, but I would encourage all of you that have regional trails in your area that are not developed to go ahead and respond to that request for input and show your support as well. That information was sent to your staff earlier this month. So again, I would encourage you all to make sure you participate in that process. I want to go ahead and scroll down a little bit so that we can look at the map. But for the purposes of this study, I want to talk a little bit about gaps, because identifying gaps becomes important in understanding how to develop our trails.
Lois, can they turn the lights down a little bit so it's easier to see?
Thank you. Does everybody have a fresh cup of coffee if we're turning the lights down? We need to make sure we're going to stay awake. All right, so a gap for the purposes of this study is where there is a point or between a segment between two points where we don't know the alignment. There are several areas where we haven't developed a trail, but we know what the alignment is. So for this study, a gap is where we don't know. And again, what are the regional trails? Might be a little more difficult to see on this particular map that's included in the report. But it is basically including the river, St. John's River to Sea Loop, which includes five counties. It includes the coast-to-coast trail, which runs from Tampa to Titusville. It includes the Black Bear Scenic Trail and the Heart of Florida Loop. We're extending that to include State Road 40 all the way across the county so that we have a good trail connection
from the east to the west side of the county. It includes the East Coast Greenway, which of course is a project that runs from Maine to Key West, and there are actually two alignments that are being considered in Florida, one going right along the coast and then one traversing to the interior a bit before it comes back out to the coast. So again, those are all the trails that we're talking about. There's also the Titusville to Edgewater Loop right here in the south. And then I mentioned the coast to coast. In this area, we're also considering extending that up. They have a lot of challenges developing the coast-to-coast trail down in the Titusville area because they're going through Kennedy Space Center and Wildlife Refuge property. When you get to the end, to the beach, it's Playland Beach, and it's an absolutely beautiful beach, but there's nothing there. Whereas if we make that connection up to New Smyrna, we have restaurants and hotels, and so we're really trying to develop that trail and have that become and be designated a part of the coast-to-coast eventually. So I just want to quickly review some facts, some numbers, and I always like the numbers. I'm not sure if I'm going to throw too much at you. This project included assessing almost 200 miles worth of regional trails in this area. So it was very ambitious, very comprehensive. 75 miles of those segments currently have a bicycle or pedestrian facility. So that's good news. Over a third are in existence. The not so good news is that only 24 miles of that actually meet the 12-foot trail criteria. So again, when we're talking about a minimum standard for a regional trail, 12-foot is what folks are starting to look for. Another 22 miles meet the 8 to 12 foot minimum. The current standards, and I'll go over those, actually allow less than 12, but the 12 is becoming the minimum. The good news, though, again, more good news, is there's almost 20 more miles that are currently funded for construction. So if we come back and report on the status in 6 months or a year from now, we're going to see a lot of changes. Another 40 miles is funded for some other phase, right-of-way, design, or feasibility study. And only about 28 miles were gaps where we didn't have a good plan identified. So again, this project addressed a good portion of those gaps. There are a few that are still kind of up in the air, and the locals that are responsible for them are not ready to move forward with identifying alignments. Just scroll down. I want to talk again briefly about trail widths, because again, if we think about the purpose of this study, it is to access that money that we expect to become available at the state level. And in order to access that funding, we really have to meet minimum criteria. And the current standards that are documented encourage 12 feet. They allow 10 feet, and under special circumstances, you can narrow it to 8 feet if you have a real difficult geographical situation. Again, you can neck it down to 8 feet, but really and truly, 12-foot is going to be the minimum standard that is set. And so as we're looking at developing the various segments of trail that would be accessing this funding at the state level, we really need to look at 12 feet as a minimum. So just getting back to the report itself, the study included a lot of stakeholder outreach. We held several workshops. We invited not only members of each of your respective areas, but also members of the East Coast Greenway and Florida Bike Association, Office of Greenways and Trails. We really did a lot of outreach to make sure that we had all the information that we might need. The consultants spent a lot of time collecting data. They did one-on-one meetings and field reviews. They covered a lot of ground to try and identify all of the options. And I want to just quickly get down to the gaps that were identified. these are, for those of you that read through this report, you'll recognize that these gaps not only showed up in this particular table, but they were also each identified in detail. And as a part of the effort, the consultant looked at these gaps and where they were able to identify an alignment and come up with a conceptual plan and cost estimate, they did. There were a couple of areas, as I mentioned, that the local jurisdiction just wasn't ready to narrow it down to a particular concept. And we'll go back and support efforts to conduct feasibility studies and narrow that down. But again, this covers 28 miles of gap segments, and it closes really the gap on all but about 6 miles of that. So again, we've I think done a pretty good job of identifying all of the needs in this area for that 200-mile network of regional trails. Accompanying the report is something called a KMZ file, and that's an electronic assessment of the trails that you can layer over Google Earth. So anybody that has an internet connection can go ahead and overlay this file. And what it shows is it shows the existing segments, and they're shaded in varying degrees of blue intensity so that those that are meeting the 12-foot are identified, those that are meeting the minimum 8 to 12 are identified, and then those that are substandard are still being recognized, because even though they don't meet a trail criteria, they do still provide a safe connection for people. A sidewalk or a bike path isn't, or a small bike path isn't necessarily ideal as a trail, but it does still satisfy sometimes the connection, at least in the near term. That KMZ file also shows areas where we have gaps and areas that we have segments of trails either funded for construction or some other type of project development. So again, this is the report that we've been working on, and it is complete, and the files and the documentation are complete. We are ready to go ahead after board action today, submit that file to the Office of Greenways and Trails so that they can update. And then also, we will update this map and some of those statistics that I was talking about at a minimum annually, so that we can continue to report back on the success and the development of the regional trails network.
Any questions? Commissioner Majisic?
Thank you, Lois. This report is critical. I sit on the Central Florida MPO Alliance, which we have worked as a region on putting the trails maps together and the gaps and for funding. Also, the East Central Florida Regional Planning Council has been working on those issues. So it certainly is important to have this report and to get it in on the timely manner. Also, hopefully there's more money coming from Amendment 1 once the legislature decides what that is and how that's going to work, that's going to be proposed for the trail. So this really puts us on the fast track for a lot of things that we may not have funding for those gaps. So it certainly is critical for us to get this done. I can't stress enough the importance for the city of Edgewater and the city of New Smyrna to come together and get that alignment and get that going. We want to be on the map as a access point for the coast-to-coast connector, starting on the east side in New Smyrna and then going to the Gulf. You know, we are the opening, we are the start, and we want to be that start. So we as a board also needs to help Edgewater and New Smyrna and get that prioritized and get that done, because I think that will be a critical, not only job maker, but it'll be a huge economic impact. Sitting on the board and the president of Bike Florida, I know how critical it is to have those trails and what money that brings into the cities now that actually bid for Bike Florida to come yearly to their area to have our bike ride. This past year, we were up in the Panhandle. We had 700 riders. We were in Wewahitchka, which there were more of us than in the town of Wewahitchka, if nobody's heard of that. Blountstown, Mariana, and Port St. Joe, and they've bid for us to come back. So, I'll be glad to do anything I can to help Edgewater and New Smyrna get that done. And with that, I move to approve this resolution.
Second, Nobby.
We have a motion and a second. Oh, I'm sorry, Councilmember Jennings, you have a question?
Just a comment on the coast to coast.
A question?
Yes, it's a question on the motion. No, on the issue.
I'm trying to get questions, and then we would take a motion.
Okay.
And then, so we do have a motion on the floor. I'm looking for any other questions. Any other questions? Okay. Now we have a motion on the floor. Would you, Ms. Dennis, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lois, on the coast, I don't want to call it the alternative spur on the coast to coast, because I think it's going to be a more viable option that we believe can be built and actually ready before the one that they're presenting down south. Is that in this plan, or is that just on a wish list?
Oh, no, that is in this plan, and it is being submitted to the Office of Greenways and Trails to be added to their opportunities map.
So then, with that going forward, I guess the next step for that piece of it, because we have some folks from the city of New Smyrna here, would be to get a meeting going and some planning with them. What's your recommendation for the next step to make that happen?
Yeah, we've been through this study in communication with the city staff on potential alignments, and I think the city is exploring their options right now. Developing trails can be a challenge, and one example of that is how we get safely through intersections, how we get across the railroad track, which tends to be a huge issue when it comes to the development of trails, because the railroad companies generally will not allow new crossings. So, of course, in that area, in order to get from west of the tracks to east of the tracks, it's easier to develop a trail if we can find a place where there is already a bicycle and pedestrian crossing and add gates and upgrade the facility. So I think the city is looking into their options right now and trying to decide which one they prefer. So that's an example of a gap segment that the alignment hasn't been identified exactly.
Thank you.
Any other discussion or debate?
Also with that segment in New Smyrna, I believe the city of Edgewater bought some property that runs up to Daytona State College's property. In helping with the crossing and the trail through that area, it connects the New Smyrna High School and the middle school and Daytona State College. So I think by using it also as safe routes to school and to cross the railroad tracks for those purposes certainly might help move the issue forward by, connecting those school sources.
Yeah, and that's a really an exciting opportunity, because we tend to get very siloed, and doing something like developing a trail, in this case it was purchasing right-of-way from a private owner and then making a connection into the back end of the Daytona State College branch. And we actually, as part of the long-range plan, met with Tom Labasso, the interim president for Daytona State, and he was very supportive of that sort of idea. And in the past, that hasn't always been the case, much like working with state and national parks. But there is a real change in the trend where folks are becoming much more supportive and recognizing the interest and the support when it comes to developing projects like this. So again, if you've worked in the past and not been well received, I would certainly encourage you to consider opening those discussions again on projects, because there's much more support than there's ever been in the past.
Any other discussion or debate? A motion to approve and second to adopt the 2015-09 Regional Trails Corridor Assessment. Is there any objection to the motion? Any objection? Without objection, so the motion passes. Could you turn the lights off in the middle for me, please? Just the middle one. Thank you. Next item is item C, review and approval of resolution 2015-11, amending the fiscal year 2014-15 to 2018-19 transportation improvement program with TIP. Is that you, Lois? Or?
Yes, I can speak to this. We have three items that are in this proposed amendment. The first is the East Central Regional Rail Trail. That's a nice segue from the last presentation. In this particular case, it is adjusting the limits for Section 3 as well as adding some additional funds. And if you tried to look at the funding, you can see some was advanced funding that is now actual funding. Some of the fund sources have changed. The bottom line is local funds are increasing by $1.9 million and federal funds are increasing by $627,000 to complete, again, that segment of the East Central Florida Rail Trail. There's also some additional funds that are being added to a US 1 resurfacing project. And then finally, item three is the Spring to Spring Trail. Really, it's a part of the Coast to Coast, and this is the gap that runs over the US 1792 bridge from Lake Monroe Park, where we have an existing trailhead, across into Seminole County. And I'll let you all know that the TCC recommended deferring until they could have a presentation from the Department of Transportation on something that has come up recently, and that is that the Department of Transportation, as part of the ultimate I-4 design work, is considering a trail as a part of the I-4 St. John's River Bridge. And this came as news to us here at the TPO, and I think it caught the TCC off guard. It was a surprise to the folks at MetroPlan as well, who we contacted to talk about it. And the bottom line is the TCC said, wait, and before we approve this, we'd like to have a full understanding of what this long-term vision is. I would tell you that I did speak with Frank O'Day from the department, and Jean may have some information to add over concern that regardless of the position that we ultimately take on a trail on I-4, this still creates a connection on the coast to coast in the very near future. So back to what I was talking about, substandard trail segments still satisfy a need. It creates a safe connection. It may not be ideal, but it does satisfy the connection and move that project forward at present. This board or any other organization would have the opportunity to weigh in on the I-4. We are still requesting a full presentation on that next meeting. And I am meeting with DOT and MetroPlan in the interim to talk about what their thoughts are on this. I'd be happy to take any feedback that you might have.
But
with regards to the TIP amendment, I think, again.
But we're including that in for approval, correct?
It is a part of the approval. I just wanted to make sure you knew what the concerns were by the TCC.
Is there any questions? Question, Commissioner Matusik?
Lois, in putting in, I had heard some conversation on the trail on I-4, and it certainly works over on the West Coast with the Suncoast Trail. There's a huge trail that goes along that toll body, so I think that's a great idea. However, the limitations to entering and exiting that trail is going to be critical only to where vehicles enter and exit. So it's not going to, it'll be, I believe, more of a longer type trail than what we're looking at as the coast-to-coast connector and making the Volusia connection with the Springs to Springs Trail. So I would like to see some presentation on what DOT is looking with that, but I think it's critical that we put this in for the Spring to Spring Coast to Coast connector over to Seminole County, only because that is moving forward. The I-4 Ultimate is still a ways away, and I think there are two different types of trails, and there are going to be two different types of users for who's using that I-4 corridor trail and who would be using the spring to springs and how that's going to be more of a connector. And I think if the trail on I-4 does come about, I think we need to looking at the access points getting from I-4 over to those coast-to-coast connectors as well, because that's going to be critical, because right there at Dirksen, we already have the trail going under I-4 there. So making sure that when they do that project, that they extend it off of I-4 and onto the trails that are already there and existing, because I don't think that should be money that we should have to put in. I think it should be part of that I-4 ultimate.
Commissioner Rebels, you have a question?
Yes, I was unclear. Is the TCC recommending that we don't move forward with this approval?
The TCC recommended to defer action on this item until they had a full presentation on the I-4 project.
And would that put anything at risk as far as funding?
No, it does not put anything at risk in terms of funding. The department is willing to work and coordinate with our partners, both the River City TPO as well as Metro Plan Orlando, to make sure that everyone is in agreement as we move forward with this effort.
But is there a funding deadline? I know we have. Do we stand to lose any money on this funding if it's not approved by a certain date?
Not by delaying it 1 month. That does not have an impact on funding.
But
no,
when would the funding be eliminated?
No, the funding that we're talking about in the case of this amendment is 2015 funding that extends through June. Your board meets in June, so we can resolve this in a timely manner. Next week, if you would prefer.
I still would like to get it approved here. If there's a problem at the TCC, we can always change it at the next meeting, correct, Willis?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I what is not in question is really the details of this project. They've been looking at the design options, and it's pretty limited because the bridge span on 1792 is what it is. But it is wide enough to have a barrier-separated usable trail, and that's what this money is doing. It's helping to fund the construction of that project, which doesn't have any other design option at this point. So, again, the I-4 conversation really is an independent conversation from this project being constructed. I think the concern arose because this kind of came out of the blue, and all of a sudden folks started saying, well, this is a temporary solution, and the long-run solution is I-4. And I can tell you, as many meetings as we've been to, we just finished the regional trail corridor assessment. That never came up. So this it really kind of came as a surprise to everyone. And so whenever something comes out of the blue like that, I think everybody immediately wants to freeze and say, wait, we need more information. Again, I don't think that the progress or the construction on the 1792 bridge moving along with that does anything. We still can have a full presentation on the considerations of I-4, what that would mean, when it would happen, which would, as you mentioned, be sometime in the future. And weigh in strongly to either support or oppose it, depending on what it looks like and what the wishes of this board are.
So any other questions? Oh, excuse me. Let me get Ron. Commissioner Sutton.
I can see both. I agree with both sides of the issue here about putting it off and not putting it off. I agree with the TCC on this, about the fact that we need more information available to us. I can agree with going ahead and voting to approve this today, but I would like to ask that our next meeting in June, we get a good report on this, because I'm like you. I've heard about three different stories about this, and there's a very short segment of it that's in. But every time I go across that bridge, I see the bicycles are really having trouble, and we got a problem with that bridge too. So I agree with going ahead with this particular motion today.
There's no motion.
Well, this subject today, but at the same time, I'd like to ask that we get a report next meeting.
Commissioner Matusik, you have a question?
On the question and a comment, and I guess more clarification, these are two separate issues, and the I-4 ultimate only goes to 472 at this point. There is talk about extending that, you know, down further, so it's not the whole corridor right now, you know, of I-4, and they're two separate projects, and somebody trying to go from Sanford into Land with the trail system that we already have in place with the coast-to-coast connector, I don't believe is going to jump on I-4. And I-4 is, what, 6 years, 7 years anyway, no telling what part of the trail is going to be added to that. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to approve it, including the Spring to Springs trail portion of 1792.
Second, Nobbick.
Okay, we have a motion to approve the resolution 2015-11 amending the fiscal year 2014-15 to 2018-19 transportation improvement program. There is a second. Is there any debate on the motion? Any debate? Hearing none, is there any objection to the motion? Without objection, showing the motion passes. Okay, we're up to Roman numeral 6A. Presentation of the draft 2015-16 2019-20 transportation improvement program. This is a presentation. Lois, you'll be doing that presentation.
Yeah, I'll go ahead and speak to the item. The transportation improvement program, or TIP, represents all of the federal and state funded projects that are scheduled within our planning area over a 5-year period. So the Department of Transportation develops a work program. That's their 5-year document. We develop, through the MPO, a TIP. Those two plans or documents have to match. And so each year, as time goes by, the old year drops off and the new out year is added. And so we're going through that process right now to take the existing work program and pull all of those out year projects into our TIP. Sometimes projects are adjusted as well. They might be advanced, they might have some funding changes, and so all of those particular changes are reflected in this draft TIP. And this covers the fiscal years 2015-16 to 19-20. And so again, it's just here for review at this point. It's available on our website. All of your staff are reviewing this as well. And it is a very large document if you think about 5 years worth of transportation projects and programs in our entire planning area. What is important for you all to pay attention to are the specific projects in your area, the specific projects that are important to you and to your jurisdiction. And so I would encourage you all to take a look at that or to work with your staff to make sure that they're looking at the detail. This is public transit, as well as road projects, as well as sidewalk and trail projects, and make sure your projects haven't gotten lost, that they're still in there, they're still funded as you've expected, and they still represent the needs of your area. We'll be bringing this back next month for approval.
Are there any questions, Lois, on this? Any questions? All right, move. Oh, I'm sorry, Lee. Mr. Matusik.
Sorry.
Okay. All right, moving on, presentation review of the draft 2015 River to Sea TPO priority projects list. Is that you also, Lois?
Yes, it is. Thank you. The River to Sea TPO annually develops a list or several lists of priority projects, and those cover a variety of categories. There are major interstate projects on the strategic intermodal system. There's bridge projects, trail projects. And we develop these through what we call the annual call for projects. And generally, that process starts right at the beginning of the calendar year in January. We hold a few workshops, and we help local governments that have questions in developing project applications. For our set-aside lists, those are ITS and traffic ops lists or bicycle and pedestrian lists, we actually go through a ranking process each year. So we take the applications, we work through a subcommittee, and we apply criteria that are approved by this board, and we go ahead and rank projects. And what we do with these lists is we develop them and send them over to the Department of Transportation. And then in the fall, as they develop their work program, they follow our lists, our priorities. And this is really kind of the heart of what the TPO gets to do, which is influence how the money is allocated by DOT in this area. So in your packet, there are what we call working drafts. They're the strike through and underline addition versions, so you can see what has been added or deleted from last year's set of lists. Now, we've added a new set of projects this year, and that was at the encouragement of the Department of Transportation, and that is major planning studies. Those may be studies that we undertake here with our planning funds, or they may be studies that the DOT undertakes. So that is a new list, and the directions or description for that was developed just before the call for projects this year. Again, it's the first year that we've done it, so we recognize that we're going to have to tweak that a bit. And one of the examples of tweaking is it didn't specifically address bicycle and pedestrian master plans. And during our workshops, a question was asked about whether those would be appropriate, because in the past those have been the responsibility of local governments. And we did respond that those would not be appropriate, but it was a workshop and not everybody was at that workshop. So the city of Daytona Beach did apply for a bicycle and pedestrian master plan. During the discussion at the TCC, or the technical committee, the committee members voted to recommend removing that, as it's the type of study that should be funded with local funds. So I'll share that with you all. Likewise, as you heard earlier, a project that was submitted on that list was to assess Page Avenue and the potential for Page Avenue to help address safety and congestion issues that are being experienced on State Road 44. We have here as staff received independent email from a number of folks, both supporting and opposing the project. We've also received a petition that we've passed along to the chairman that has over 200 signatures opposing that project. That particular project is in the city, as well as about 40% of it is in county. So those are two projects on our study list that are being considered. If you all have any specific direction or questions, again, today it's just here for presentation, but next month it will be returning for approval.
Any questions? Commissioner Gilliam?
And this is a presentation, so Mr. Chair, would it be appropriate for discussion this morning?
Yes,
as well?
Go ahead.
The issue that happened at TCC with the Daytona Beach Bike Ped Master Plan is a little troublesome, because what we've got is TCC making policy, and that's a problem. There is no policy that describes what is to be included in these transportation planning studies. Daytona Beach is 70 square miles. I mean, this is a significant project within the city confines. I believe it is appropriate for that project to be included on that transportation studies list. For some reason, they decided that a discussion at a meeting where there were no minutes, there was no policy, that they would implement a policy. And we can't do that. There's just no way that we can operate this organization that casually and expect to have any structure as we move forward to know what it is that we should or should not do. I would propose, this is just a presentation, that when this comes back, that we add Daytona Beach's Bike Ped Master Plan back to that priority studies list. And the TCC would like to propose a policy in the future that could come to this board for consideration. They're more than able to do that. But at this point, based on the criteria that's out there and the discussion that's been had, this project is appropriate for that particular priority list.
Lee? Is it regarding this issue?
Yes.
Okay. Then I'll go. I
would support the city of Daytona on that. There's several gaps to the greenway from Maine to Key West that are included, the St. John's River to Sea Loop, all of those are included and that are critical to that as well. But with Daytona being a mecca for tourism, one of the main things that are asked at the welcome stations when people come into the state of Florida is where are the trails and where can I bike? And I think that's important to our tourism for Daytona to have some sort of a trail master plan for the people that come for those, mainly for the special events and the residents, because a lot of them don't bike because they aren't comfortable with those roads. So I would certainly support that. I had a question, though, to Lois on the Highway 40 project on the widening on page 2, number 5, by prioritizing the SIS system, and it says widening from Cone Road to 11. Up on the widening of 17, it talks about the multi-use trail. On the project number 5, it doesn't say anything about the trail, and we've got that 2-mile gap between Airport Road and Cone Road on that part that's already been widened to 4 lanes. So I would like to somehow see that piece that was left out somehow added to this major project to get that connection done, because it doesn't make sense to have the 40 connection still missing that gap on that main part. And if we can get DOT, since they're going to be working out there anyway, just to bring that trail down to connect to the 4-laning there that's already there, I think that would help everybody.
Well, the gap that you mentioned.
Please identify yourself.
I'm Steve Harris, TPO staff, bicycle and pedestrian coordinator. The gap that you mentioned along State Road 40 was identified in our regional trails corridor assessment that you just adopted. And it will be forwarded on to the Florida Office of Greenways and Trails. But that was not only was it identified, but that was one of the segments in the assessment that had a concept plan produced for it and cost estimates as well. So yes, that was studied in the assessment. It is included, that particular gap.
I know the gap is included in the trails component, but since this portion, they're going to be widening 2 lanes to 4 lanes on 40, already connecting to the 4 lanes that are there, why can't they add that piece that was missed as part of this project to make that connection? The study's already there. We can give DOT all of that information and just add it to this project. It's not going to be that much since they're out there working anyway.
I think when it comes to contracting, it's not that simple, but we'll work with the department and see what can be done, whether that needs to be handled independently or as a part of an existing contract, if allowable.
Councilwoman Dennis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Lois, can you explain to me on page 3, US 1 at Park Avenue in Edgewater, is the only intersection not yet funded?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and why is that?
This has been a little bit of a challenge because the original study was so old. And then we went back and we reassessed those intersections, and the Department of Transportation reassessed those intersections. Ultimately, the department worked with staff from the city of Edgewater to determine what specifically are the needs. The DOT had done a median project, an access management project that corrected some of the problems. And the bottom line is the upgrades that are currently needed at that intersection are really so small at this point that the DOT is going to pursue those independently, probably through a push button. But the bottom line is there was some changing over time since, again, more than a decade had passed in what was needed. And this, Bob Keith, our senior planner, he has most directly communicated with the DOT and with Darren at the city.
Yeah, I just wanted to add that the DOT has actually programmed a signal system upgrade at that intersection. I don't have the date. It's in the draft TIP. But it is project number 437-1211. It does call for mast arms and a signal upgrade.
I'm not talking just about the signal upgrade because, I don't know if you're aware, but it's actually reflected here in priority ranking 9 was removed. The intersection of Old Mission and Park Avenue has been upgraded because there's been collaboration between Volusia County and the City of Edgewater. So that intersection has been widened to make access for the semis going down Park Avenue for Industrial Park Center. In the last county council meeting, the council just unanimously approved $3 million to three-lane Park Avenue. So I would like to have that revisited. I mean, the city and the county, we're investing our dollars in good partners to open that whole area up. So Park Avenue will be three-lane. The commercial activity out there is so strong and growing. And now, Industrial Park is, the commercial park out there is rated number one in the county for building because the others are pretty much built out. So I would definitely, this needs to be revisited because the city and the county, like I said, we're spending our dollars and commitment to that and just appropriated $3 million to finish three-lane in Park Avenue. We need to take a look at this one.
We'll get with you as well as the folks from Edgewater because, again, it was our understanding that everything that the city did was recognized by the department and being programmed. And if that is not the case, then clearly we need to go back and revisit it. But
let's revisit,
there has
please.
Been a good deal of conversation about what
understand.
Is needed at that intersection.
I'm just going on the record with this, and if we're going to go forward and revamp the three-lane, the rest of it, we need to get that US 1 intersection because it's the only one not funded, and it's the one that you have private public dollars going into the whole way. Thank you.
Any other questions? Discussion? Commissioner Gunter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is only a presentation, so I will not go in depth right now, but I just want to comment on the Page Avenue Extension Feasibility Project that this is important for the city, very important for all the people who support this project, who live in the city, and also it's very important. This feasibility study addresses and deals with all the specific concerns and questions that the people who oppose the project or have concerns about the project. So I just wanted to make that statement, and I'll address it further next month when it's actually an action item more in depth. Thank you.
I'm sure on this particular issue, when it comes up for all of them, be some quite a bit of debate next meeting. So thank you. Any other questions or discussion? All right, thank you. Move on to item C, presentation of the draft fiscal year 2015-16 River to Sea PTO budget.
Thank you. Budget subcommittee met in May to go ahead and review the proposed budget for the upcoming fiscal year. Of course, that budget will take effect on July 1st of this year. This is an activity that we go through each year. To go ahead and set the budget for the upcoming year, in this case, the year 2015-16. It's being presented for your review. It is formatted in a way that is standard from year to year. Generally, our revenues will fluctuate depending on the amount of carryover money we have, the amount of federal funds that are available. And generally, we develop a budget that allocates all of those funds. You might notice that we have a fairly healthy contingency line item this year. Of that, about $15,000 is local funding, and about $65,000 actually is federal funding. And we tend to leave some money in the contingency pot for unforeseen issues that come up for changes in task orders, but at some point during the year, if if not used or demanded, then we go ahead and allocate those towards projects if necessary. That being said, I'll entertain any questions that you might have. And again, this is just here for your review, and it will be back for approval next week.
Any questions? Any questions? Okay. Item D, presentation of the cross-country connector study, cross-county connector study. Thank you. We have Mr. Ralph Bovet will do a presentation on this.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the board, TPO staff. My name is Ralph Bovet. I'm currently serving as the deputy project manager for the consulting team being led by Parsons Brinkerhoff. We are working on the Volusia Transit Connector Study, also known as the Cross County Connector, here on behalf of the Florida Department of Transportation to make this presentation to you this morning. I do have Libertad Acosta Anderson with me from the Florida Department of Transportation. Libertad is the transit supervisor for the FDOT urban office in Orlando. Also have one of your former colleagues here with me, the esteemed Pat Northey, who is working with Giabi and Associates and currently serves as the public information liaison for this project. We have many partners on this study, local governments from Sanford all the way to Daytona Beach, Seminole County, Volusia County, obviously your TPO board and your advisory committees, as well as public transit agencies, Lynx and VOTRAN, helping us with this project. We've also established two advisory committees, a project advisory group and a community liaison group. The PAG helps us with the technical aspects of the study. Your PAG representatives are Lois Bollenbach and Carol Hinckley. We've got a couple of others here that were here in the audience, John Cheney, Pedro Leon, and some others. We also established a community liaison group. This is sort of an adjunct to the project advisory group, but helps us more on the community-based aspects of getting the word out about the study and serving as a sounding board as we bring ideas forward throughout the study. We've got a couple of our community liaison group members here, Doug and Nancy Hall, representing the transit-dependent populations within our study area. Just a very quick overview. This is a systems planning study to look at providing enhanced transit throughout this region. The study limits actually start at State Road 46 in Seminole County and extend all the way up to US 1 in Daytona. One of the things that has come out throughout our study and that we like to emphasize is that SunRail Phase 2 North, the portion of SunRail from DeBary to DeLand, is a given in terms of our study. It is moving forward. The department is committed to that project. This study is the cross-county connector is to help support and advance future enhanced transit service within the study area. We're on a 20-month schedule. We're just about over the halfway mark. We've been through initial project kickoff meetings with local governments and the public. Just last month, we presented some initial build alternatives to the general public. I'll talk a little bit more about that in my presentation. We are working to refine those alternatives and identify those which are more viable to advance to a more detailed level of evaluation. We will present those again to local elected officials and the public in the fall of this year and hope to wrap this study up just shortly after the first of the year. One of the first activities that we conducted during this study was to look at different transit types or modes, ranging from just enhanced local bus service all the way up to commuter rail, and you see them listed here on this slide. Through a screening process, we determined that those that are most applicable to this study area include local bus, express bus, or bus rapid transit, as well as a commuter rail or perhaps even a streetcar type of technology. So those five transit modes then advanced into a more detailed evaluation, looking at the various corridors that we have available within our study area, principally I-4, US 1792, US 92, and how we could enhance transit service and connectivity to existing and future SunRail from Southwest Volusia over to Daytona Beach. So we developed a series of alternatives. There are some assumptions and some commonalities between all of the alternatives. One is we will make connections to a proposed intermodal transfer station that is being planned separately by the Florida Department of Transportation in the vicinity of the Daytona Beach Airport, and then also make connectivity to Votrans Transfer Plaza at US 1. And then the third assumption, which I've already mentioned, is that SunRail Phase 2 North between DeBary and DeLand is a given as far as our project goes. So let me go through each of the alternatives. There are six of them in total. The first one is an express bus alternative that would utilize I-4 and State Road 44 to provide enhanced transit service that could extend all the way down to Orlando, but would focus on Southwest Volusia to Daytona, and then also utilize State Road 44 for express bus service out to the DeLand SunRail station. The second alternative is a commuter rail alternative that would principally utilize the I-4 corridor. We've been in constant contact with the Florida Department of Transportation, working with them and the utilization of the transit envelope that is available along I-4. Alternative 2 would originate at the DeBary station and would utilize the connection in the vicinity of Dirksen and the utility easement to get over to I-4 and then run up to Daytona along the median of I-4 with a short shift over to the US 92 corridor. From the intermodal station near the airport, because of the challenges, engineering challenges that we have in bringing commuter rail all the way into Daytona, getting it as close as we can to the intermodal station and then transferring to either a bus rapid transit or a streetcar type of technology that could then operate along US 92 or other parallel facilities within Daytona to get over to the Votrans Transfer Plaza are things that we're continuing to evaluate. The third alternative basically uses the same corridor as identified in alternative two, but is an express bus technology. This alternative could utilize State Road 400 over to Williamson, and then utilize Williamson and Midway to kind of wrap around the speedway and the airport, getting to the intermodal transfer station near the airport. Alternative four is a little bit different. This is a bus rapid transit technology. We've been asked a lot of questions, what is the difference between express bus and bus rapid transit? So just very quickly, express bus usually handles longer distance routes and services with fewer stops, concentrated at park and ride facilities to focus on large concentrations of ridership. And could operate and traditionally operates in what we call mixed traffic, so you're sharing the road with other vehicles. Bus rapid transit is a technology that emulates rail-like features. It can still provide longer distance trips, but they're usually the service plans are usually shorter. You have more frequent stops. Bus rapid transit can operate in mixed traffic, but oftentimes is on its own fixed, what we call guideway or separate right-of-way. An example of a BRT is the Lynx Limo service in downtown Orlando. So this alternative would utilize bus rapid transit and serve two routes basically to and from Daytona, serving the DeLand SunRail station as well as the DeBary SunRail station, and focus on 1792 and the US 92 corridors. Alternative 5 is another commuter rail alternative. This one would originate and utilize the existing and a potential extension of State Road 472 and would be predicated on a potential new station in Orange City. From the 472 interchange with I-4, then this alternative continues to operate within the median of I-4, very similar to Alternative 2, which was the other commuter rail alternative. The final alternative is basically the same set of corridors, State Road 472 and I-4, but utilizes express bus technology as opposed to commuter rail. So we took all of these alternatives out to the public back in April. We had three public meeting events. Combined, we had over 120 attendees, which included many of you here today, elected officials, members of our project advisory group and community liaison group. We had a survey and comment cards that we provided for folks to hand to provide additional commentary to us. We've received over 65 written comments and completed survey cards to date, as well as over 15 general comment cards. So what have we heard? Some of the common themes and the things that we've been hearing through this public engagement is that there is a need to improve and provide enhanced transit services, particularly for those that are transportation disadvantaged or transit dependent. I've already addressed the status of SunRail Phase 2 North and DeLand, but that was a common theme as well. And also a few things that we're looking at in response to public input is the utilization of the spur track that comes off of the main line just south of the DeLand station and heads east through industrialized areas and gets us a little closer to the core downtown area of DeLand. We're also looking at some public commentary that we've received regarding extending commuter rail directly from the DeLand SunRail station. So we're actually looking at those potential options in response to public comment. So where do we go from here? We're going to continue to review the public input that we've received, refine the initial alternatives as necessary, hope to identify a smaller set of alternatives that could then move into more detailed evaluation. All of this leading up to a draft recommended solution for this project, hold another series of public meetings and elected officials briefings in the fall, and then complete our documentation, and our study will be complete sometime in February 2016. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my brief presentation. I would stand for any questions or comments.
Any questions? Josh, the bearded one over there. I didn't recognize.
Thank you. Wasn't me.
I change my look every 3 months to throw people off. I know this might seem silly, but with the advancement of self-driving vehicles, has everyone used Uber yet? Has anyone used Uber? If that transitions into self-driving vehicles, half the world will need a car. It's so simple and easy, and it's actually kind of scary how well it works. There's no reason to drink and drive anymore. It makes life a lot easier. So, have you taken that into consideration as an alternative?
Not specifically, but we're aware. Our firm has been actually involved in some of the advanced research that's being conducted on automated vehicles. It's something we could certainly look into. Whether it fully supplants the need for enhanced transit service or is it something that just supports it, could be something that we could investigate.
Yeah, it just seems like if you look at the investment, the billions of dollars being invested into it,
right.
It's inevitable.
And how it evolves, you know, from a societal and behavioral standpoint, you know, and how it fits into the overall mode choices, which is really what we're trying to accomplish with a project like this, is providing alternative choices. So that could be, you know, just another variable.
Yeah, because I mean they're going to be looking. I mean they're already talking about finding test sites and areas where they can implement it to see how well it works.
Right.
We are a planning organization. If we can be in the lead for something like this, I mean they're all focusing on your New Yorks, your bigger cities, but they're going to be looking for a couple areas that are more distance oriented. So if we could throw that into the analysis, we might get lucky enough to get
take that back to the department, and we'll see if we can incorporate that.
I mean, from a TPO standpoint, we do have one advantage. We are a racing capital of the world. We have a great brand, great marketing, and we really might have the ability to entice a couple of these companies that are looking at doing some space technology here. While they're here, they're also making those investments into self-driving vehicles. It might seem a little far-fetched, a little spacey, but if we're going to do it, we might as well just throw that in there as well. Maybe we get lucky. Thank you.
Yeah, Josh, people have told me there are some scary things about you at times.
Got a dream, right?
Any other questions?
Thank you for looking at the spur going from SunRail and DeLand to into the city of DeLand. I know that that's important. And on that note, and why it's important to acknowledge that this is taking into consideration the Phase 2 North. As we all know, DOT has applied for a Tiger Grant for the money to complete that. And I just wanted to acknowledge the County of Osceola, along with Metro Plan. They were looking to put in a Tiger Grant to compete with our Phase 2 North, and graciously withdrew, so there won't be any competition within our region. That really just shows how important the DeLand part is from DeBerry into DeLand as a region and not just a local project, and we certainly appreciate DOT's support of that North End project that will be done.
Thank you.
Josh, your card is still up. You. Any other? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Item E, presentation and development on development of the draft 2040 long-range transportation plan project list.
So the long-range plan consists of a cost-feasible list of transportation projects. Those are the projects that we can afford. And in order to develop that list, we go through a series of modeling exercises trying to envision what will happen in the future and what kind of demand will come of that. And we've actually developed two scenarios. The first one is based on the trend of growth and utilizes transportation only, or really road only, solutions. And that is historically how a TPO or MPO has tried to resolve their issues. But we wanted to take a second approach as well this time around and say, well, you know what, the TPO doesn't control land use, but we know that land use and transportation are connected. Can we create a different sort of land use future? And so in solving our mobility needs, we address demand by land use, transit, and roadway improvements. And so we have our consultants. They're going to talk about where we are in this process, about those particular alternatives, and how we get to next month, which is really important, and that is really looking at the draft cost-feasible list.
Good morning. Martha Moore from Gabby & Associates. You've been seeing me up here every month for about a year and a half now, and as Lois said, we're really getting to the fast and furious part of the LRTP where we do develop those cost-feasible project lists, look at our needs. I'm going to ask our sub-consultant partner, which is Charlotte Davidson from Leftwich Consulting Engineers. They have been in charge of the modeling phase of this project, and she's going to talk about how we have developed those initial project lists that we'll go forward with from now.
Yes, I'm Charlotte Davidson, and I'm from Leftwich Consulting Engineers. I'm here today to talk to you about your 2040 long-range transportation plan and the two alternatives, as Lois mentioned, that have been analyzed and the results of that. So I'm going to give you just a brief overview, but try to give you the points that you need to know so you understand the process and what has occurred up to date. So generally speaking, we have the two alternatives, and we have analyzed and modeled those alternatives, both the highway only and the highway plus intense transit improvements for the two different land use scenarios. And we have presented that information to all your committees, and we're here to present that information to you as well.
I know that's not background. Josh's phone.
With regards to the transit alternative, last month my boss, Scott Lepich, presented to you exactly what that was made up of. Essentially, your 2035 long-range transportation plan man's transit project list is included for transit projects, as well as GoTrans adopted TDP project list, which are part of the long-range plan. And there was actually four projects that were identified that were not already being considered for funding in the TDP, but that have been added as well. We also looked at the sustainable development corridors that the land use committee developed as part of their planning process to identify which corridors should have more intense transit development. And then in addition to that, we added transit services between Flagler and Volusia County on A1A and on US 1. So that's kind of the big picture. And for the highway only, it was roadway widenings, roadway extensions, very traditional, what you're familiar with. We looked at the strategic intermodal system plan, other arterials, projects, and projects that were provided by stakeholders. And this is kind of a reminder of as to what you heard last month. We also looked at Volusia County's public works strategic roadway plan, and the unfunded priority projects, and Crompton DRI for this plan was assumed to be in part of the roadway improvements as well, including an interchange. First map that is shown on the screen is a base year transit route layout map. It shows essentially where the transit routes are today, so you can get perspective as to how much we're making improvement on the transit side. As you see, on this northern part of the TPO area, they're really, it's concentrated in the Daytona and just north areas. On map two, for the southern part of the TPO area, you see transit routes along various roadways in Deltona, some in DeLand, New Smyrna, in Daytona again, and other areas to the south. When you jump to 2040 and you look at the transit alternatives, here's when you see all the improvements. You see improvements going into Flagler County, where they were not currently placed today. Connections between the two counties, that's new. On the southern part of the TPO area, you see more improvements in the West Volusia area, specifically along the Sunrail stations. You see more improvements in the southeast area along those communities. So this is just where new routes are coming in. In addition to that, you're looking at frequency increases. In some cases where it's currently 45 minutes, 130 minutes, and so forth, increases in services on the weekends, longer hours in the evenings. The bottom line is, when we did our modeling analysis, today there's roughly, and I'm not exact on this number, there's 10,000 transit trips in your network on a daily basis. When we ran the highway-only alternative, surprisingly, it's still around 10,000 daily trips. What's happening is, because we have so many roadway projects, it's actually pulling the future demand into the, you know, so you're not seeing that spike in transit you might expect because you have extra development or in lane use. But as soon as you offer extra service, and we're essentially about doubling transit services with this alternative, you actually get a doubling in the traffic or the transit ridership. So very significant. Obviously, transit is very dependent on funding, but just the knowledge and seeing how far we can take, we can go with transit, I think, is a very knowledgeable point. This map is the highway-only map. What it shows is just the improvements that are being proposed from your TRP 2019, any point from 2020 through 2040. Those are the highway improvements. They're widened by number of lanes, showing you the black two-lane improvements, three is purple, and so forth. And as you can see, there's quite a few improvements here. In the south, you see as well, there's extensive list of improvements that are being considered. And I want to point out the managed lanes on I-4, widening the roadways to 10 lanes, as well as their interchange improvements here as well. The bottom line on the highway side is that if you don't do any improvement past what you have in your TIP and you keep building, you're obviously going to have deficiencies on roadways, as would be expected. You already have deficiencies in some cases today. Once you start having highway-only improvements, you are going to see the majority of those deficiencies alleviated. Now, in some cases, such as I-4, the desire is actually there. They want to use I-4, but in some cases they're really delaying themselves or using traffic, using the roadway during different hours or finding alternate routes. So actually, that road is jumping higher than you might even expect. The same thing for the transit characterization, the transit plus the highway alternative. Again, you're seeing a decrease in the number of deficiencies, and that's what I want to leave you with. And with that, I'm going to turn it back around over to Martha. She's going to go over what the next steps of the process are.
I know those probably have to be about the smallest tables that y'all have ever seen. And we're certainly happy to provide you a file. You can zoom it up as big as you like on your screen or print an 11 by 17 copy. But what we've done now is taken these initial project lists, and we had developed a screening process that's been approved through the LRTP subcommittee. And so we're going through on these local projects, and we're just going through and ranking them based on our goals and objectives that we defined a year ago, actually a year and a half ago for this. We're adding cost estimates right now to the project improvements. And the horse trading, you know, we try to see how much will we we know how much funds we have. We have to be able to put the projects into the different pots of money to see what we can afford and develop that cost feasible list versus our needs list. And that's what we're doing right now, and we'll present that list to you next month. We have an LRTP subcommittee meeting on Friday, if anyone is interested in attending, where we will be talking about congestion management and the projects.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Councilwoman Dennis.
Just one comment. Going forward, for presentation purposes, it would be helpful if I had something I could actually read. And I know that you commented on that, but during this, I even went on my iPad and went to the agenda. I can't even blow it up big enough to read it. So with all due respect, next presentation, if you could have something we could actually read. At least I can't read it, even with my readers. I can't see it online either, so. I'd like it actually before the meeting and during the presentation, but just going forward.
All right, thank you. Commissioner Matusik.
We had the trail study that was on a file with our agenda that we could actually open up and look and blow up and use, and maybe some of that technology on with our agenda next month to that way we're not printing out so much, but you can at least open it up and read it. My old eyes now, instead of having to use glasses, I have to take them off to try to look at that, and I still can't see it. So.
We're all just getting a little older here.
At the hour.
Okay. Next up, we have FDOT report. Ferguson, you have anything, sir?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. The 415 project in the western end of the county is moving along well. We're nearing wrap up on the section from, Reed Ellis to north of Acorn Lake Road. We're still in the midst of the work on the southern section closures, because I'm an old county from the county line to Reed Ellis. But work does progress. Moving on, there's U.S. 92 Ped Bridge in Daytona. That has a projected end date of the end of the calendar year. We have a fairly high degree of confidence that will be achieved. Skipping a few of these, just to move on to the higher profile items. Finally, we also have the system interchange. This topic came up at the TCC meeting, and I just wanted to let everyone know that if you want to keep track of this project, your best way on a regular basis, because this will be a very impactful kind of a project. We'll be reworking several of the ramps that currently exist, and we're trying to make things smoother and safer for everyone. It will require certain ramp closures as well as lane restrictions on existing ramps. So the website that is currently set up is called CFLroads.com. That's plural.com, and it's a department website. You just go there. It has a drop down for Volusia County. Click on that, and you will certainly see that systems interchange project there. It'll be one of the first projects that you find. Click on that, and then that will give you all of the contact information, and the website itself is updated regularly, but you get the latest, most current data by contacting the project manager and asking to be included in the updates concerning lane closures or any other major issues. So I just wanted to let everyone know about that one, because it's coming up very soon. The rest of the projects just seem to be moving along fairly well as well. The estimated completion dates, some of them have passed, but the work still progresses. Those were all set earlier in the process. We have a number of push-button projects. The design is complete on the I-4 westbound on-ramp for State Road 44 and a couple other projects. We did get one that's under construction at the Seminole Woods Boulevard with US 1. Are there any questions?
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Ferguson.
You're welcome.
Our next item, Executive Director's Report. I noticed she has three letters that were sent out. Lois?
That's correct, and those are included for your review. Just a quick update on the State Road 417. I do have a meeting scheduled tomorrow to speak with folks from Florida's Turnpike about what they've uncovered in terms of accessing that money and what sort of scope of services they may be able to write as a part of that. I'll bring that information back to this group once we have some detail. Just to let folks know, in terms of that sense of urgency that had been provided, it looks like MAP 21 is likely to be extended a few months, and the word behind that is that it'll probably get extended further through the end of the year. So it doesn't appear as though there's any replacement authorization bill that's going to be coming that may jeopardize those funds in the near future. Just another item. There was some reporting on an action that was taken by MetroPlan Orlando to allocate, and the article said gas tax dollars, but just so you understand, those are state-level taxes, gas taxes, and they come in the form of district dedicated revenue, or DDR funds, and we get those here. And in the past, those funds have really been allocated for road projects. But in looking through, I guess, the fine print of how those funds can be used, they can be used for transit operations and maintenance. And so MetroPlan had made a decision beginning in the out year, so it wouldn't actually start for 5 years, but they've made a decision to allocate 30% of their DDR funds to transit, O&M. And this is to help provide startup projects. They've had a lot of studies, a lot of what used to be called AAs, about starting new and expanded transit service, but there's no revenue option for that. And so what they're hoping to do is use this to help as seed money to get some of those projects started. It is not contemplated, as I understand, to be used for SunRail, but that is just something for folks to consider. And to Councilman Wagner's point regarding Uber and automated vehicles, I'll look into maybe getting somebody to come and give a presentation. The state of Florida is way ahead of the nation when it comes to testing and providing support, and they're trying to develop infrastructure guidance support as well for automated vehicles. And, you know, folks like Cadillac are talking about in the next 5 years having an automated vehicle that could operate at highway speeds as well as speeds under 35. So it's not really that, within 5 years, it's not that far down the road. And there are some analyses underway about how that may impact travel and safety and the capacity of our existing road network. So I'll, again, look into having somebody come back. We can't, as a part of our traffic model, though, model Uber and things like that. So we're still kind of stuck with modeling transit at this point. And that's all I have.
Okay. Any other comments? Anybody? We're lining up here.
Right here.
Okay. We'll start over here with Commissioner McGirt and then go to...
Thank you, Chairman. Last night at the New Smyrna Beach City Commission, we passed a unanimous resolution to slow down traffic, move a 45-mile-an-hour sign 200 or 300 yards to the west where you come in at 55 miles an hour. It was mentioned to me last night whether or not I can come before the board today and request a letter of support for that. Simply because this is similar to the area we're talking about right now, Hidden Pines Boulevard, where there's a tremendous amount of traffic that comes out of that onto 44 to cross over. There's no light. We've requested a light from DOT. DOT will not provide one. It doesn't meet the criteria yet. So we wanted to just slow down the 45-mile-an-hour marker, which is just about at Hidden Pines Boulevard, but traffic doesn't slow down until after. We want to move it back, and simply I was just passing along a request to you guys for a letter of support. So if you're inclined to, I'd appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
This has to do with the Small City Alliance. You know, between the rotating nature of the voting member and absences at any given meeting, could an announcement be made at the beginning of the meeting who the voting voting member for the Small City Alliance will be for that meeting?
We can do that, sir.
Right. Thanks.
Thank you, sure. Chair. I just wanted to state that I was given the opportunity a couple of weeks ago to attend the training for the MPO Institute. I appreciate that very much because although I've been on this board since 2012, I knew there was still a lot that I needed to learn. Lois had assisted me quite a bit when I first was placed on the board, and I've learned a lot from the workshops. I've tried to self-teach a little bit, but I didn't realize how much I needed to learn until I went to the class. So I just want to thank you for the opportunity to be able to attend that. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I know we have some people that are going to that later on this year. All right, any other business? With that, we are adjourned.